I'm Haley Joe.
And I'm Coco.
And this is Peaches and Screams.
Episode 3, The Dream Master, the fourth installment of Nightmare on Elm Street, the original series, written and directed by lovely Wes Craven.
Yes, Wes Craven. I was just trying to remember what we did. We skipped to Dream Master and then Dream Child. We did a double feature.
4 and 5, yep. So... Nightmare on Elm Street's your favorite.
It is. I actually have a canvas of Freddy's face from an artist in Indianapolis who I forget the name of. But yeah, I'm a big fan. I think that I love the first one. It's like a classic horror movie, and then as they go on, the whole story of going into the dreams and the way Freddy can get to you and everything, and then the Dream Child, how he gets to her through the kid. I mean, it's so brilliant. It's not like a Jason who is literally just slashing teenagers. Yeah, here, space, or... And Freddy talks. Freddy's funny. Is it Dream Master when he, the first... Or it's not the first kill.
With the waterbed?
The waterbed kill. When he says, how's about this for a wet dream?
Yeah, he's full of puns and bad jokes. They're almost like dad jokes. Maybe we should recall or rename dad jokes to Fred jokes.
Fred jokes! That's terrible. You should be ashamed for you. I'm, regretting it.
You are all my children now.
Anyway, everyone listening should probably know who Fred Krueger is, but if you haven't, for some strange reason, familiarized yourself with Nightmare on Elm Street.
At least the first one.
At least the first one. You've got to go back and watch it. Nancy is like the best Scream Queen protagonist.
Oh, yeah. She's great because she's smart, but she's also emotional, like emotionally driven, and she's a good combo.
And personally, I mean, we talked about this in the pilot episode, but I love the second Nightmare on Elm Street.
The homoeroticism.
Yes, there is homoeroticism.
We have to talk about it.
It's not overt, I guess, but the gym coach is gay and into like BDSM. So he runs into the protagonist, who's actually a guy in the second movie. They run into each other at like a leather bar at one point.
You know, just your common, everyday run-of-the-mill leather bar.
Yeah, I mean, just in little...
Just on Main Street, just next to the bakery.
And then the film series kind of takes a turn with Dream Warriors, number 3.
Yeah.
So the first and the second one, it is, you know, just kind of Freddy pursuing these kids. But then Dream Warriors, the third one, it kind of switches a little.
Nancy's in that one still, right? She's like the social worker therapist.
Yes, Heather Langenkamp is in the third one, as well as Patricia Arquette.
That's right. I forgot about that. See, I need to rewatch that one, too.
Same. We should have probably started with that one, but...
But we decided to go in.
I haven't seen 4 and 5 in a long time, so yeah. I was glad that we...
Yeah, me neither. Well, because the child one does get a little... The gore in it and the horror is awesome. It's so cool. The way Freddy, when he, like, reforms... Or is that... That's actually in Dream Warriors.
No, that's the Dream Master. When he's, like, the little baby that's, like, yes. Voldemort-looking ass. Yeah.
Yes! And then he, like... It's very, like, Hellraiser, how he, like, reforms and his blood and muscles and everything comes back. I love that. Or like the kind of claymation animation look of Evil Dead, the decomp in that movie. That I love that look. I love that in horror. I think it's super cool.
And the one thing that I really love about every single one of these Freddy movies is Nightmare on Elm Street, I should say, the endings. In every single ending, there's like a flash of
everything's fine,
but then you'll see like a glimpse of him and like a reflection.
Exactly. It's always like a dreamlike state. It's always a dreamlike state, and like it's supposed to be the conclusion, the happy ending, but it ends up being not what it seems.
Right. And like even throughout the movies, we kind of go back and forth between, are they asleep or are they dreaming?
Yeah, you can't tell. You can never really tell. You have to.
So the baby daddy in the dream child, when he's driving, I love that one because, yeah, Dan, he's fallen asleep at the wheel, but then we think that he like jolts awake. Like he's like, oh, I hit the rumble strips, I'm awake. But actually, he's fallen asleep.
Mm-hmm. The first time they wake up, they're probably not awake. It's a good rule of thumb.
And so then after the two that we watched, there's also Dream Master, Dream Child, Final Nightmare, Freddy's New Nightmare, Freddy vs. Jason, and then there's the reboot.
Which we don't need to. Is that the one with the bathtub? Where the brother's in the bathtub and...
That's Freddy vs. Jason. So Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, that one switches gears again. We get out of the dream warrior master child arc, and then we move into a more comedic movie. I mean, it stars Roseanne Barr and Tom Arnold. They're not major characters, but they're there. So Freddy's Dead is, I think, one of the funnier ones. And then after that, we do have Freddy vs. Jason, which also is a classic. I wouldn't say it's so much scary as I think it's more funny and action-packed because we see Freddy and Jason fighting, which is like...
And it's and they can't beat each other. I mean, one's immortal and one is literally in your dreams. So it's like they can't... It's a vicious cycle. And that's why the best part of the ending is when Freddy winks.
Yeah, like Jason's holding Freddy's decapitated head and then Freddy winks.
I love Freddy. He's so funny.
It's just unfortunate because I don't want to watch a Nightmare on Elm Street film where Robert Englund isn't Freddy Krueger. That man is Freddy Krueger through and through.
And I do love New Nightmare, that's the meta one. Robert Englund in that movie playing Freddy as well as playing himself. That movie, honestly, it's brilliant. And I didn't watch it until I was an adult, but...
Yes, and that one, I skipped one. That one came out before Freddy vs. Jason in 1994. And actually, that one was also Wes Craven. He directed, screenwrote, did the story.
And is Lin Shaye in only the first one? I love Lin Shaye.
Wait, who is she in the first one?
She's the teacher.
Oh my goodness, that woman.
She's, I mean, of course she's much younger, but...
She's everywhere. I completely forgot.
I love Lin Shaye.
Yep, as teacher. Dang. Our favorite horror movie, Margot Martindale.
And it's fun because in this is totally... kind of a, this is only relevant because of Lin Shaye, but the person who plays young Lin Shaye in one of the Insidious movies actually is like a really good version, because if you look at her as the teacher in the original, they look very similar. Not the original, but in Nightmare, they look very similar. So
funny enough, Lin Shaye's brother, Robert Shaye, was also in the movie. He had two uncredited roles as broadcasters for local television news and KRGR, Kruger, radio station.
Her brother is actually in the industry. I listened to an interview with them where it led me to believe...
He's the founder of New Line Cinema.
Yeah, it led me to believe that he got her a lot of jobs and a lot of opportunities at places. And stuff. So
yeah, I mean, the New Line Cinema was the one that released A Nightmare on Elm Street, so
that makes perfect sense. I didn't realize that, so we're even learning new things
as we go along.
That I love learning new things about horror. We should watch New Nightmare sometime, though, because that looks so funny.
He produced every single Nightmare film. Nightmare 1, Freddy's Revenge, Dream Warriors, Dream Master, Dream Child, Final Nightmare, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, Freddy vs. Jason.
Well, I mean, if it's New Line Cinema, then he's part of it all.
Yeah, even the reboot. He was the executive producer.
Because they probably just have the rights to that character, yeah. Especially now that Wes Craven's passed away several years ago.
Yeah, when was that?
2015. August 30th.
R.I.P.
I mean, he did Nightmare on Elm Street and he did Scream.
Scream, which I love. He did the original's Last House on the Left, which was remade with the Jennifer Lawrence. And that is now on Netflix. We should review that. But he also did the original Hills Have Eyes, Swamp Thing. The People Under the Stairs.
I was just about to say that. I love that movie.
Underrated. If you are looking for a good, good horror movie, but it's also kind of like a thriller and suspense, definitely check out People Under the Stairs from 1991.
It's honestly a family affair. It's a family film. Because it's the protagonist is a kid. And it's about... Yeah, it's a horror comedy, and it's about, I mean, at the heart of it, it's about, you know, looking out for each other, and sometimes, adults are bad guys, and you have to...
Yes. So, I'm on its wiki page, and so the People Under the Stairs, Craven actually said that it was inspired by a news story from the late 1970s in which two burglars broke into a Los Angeles household, causing the police to discover two children who had been locked away by their parents. The film was a surprise commercial success and received generally mixed to positive reviews from critics and audiences. But that's interesting that it was based, I mean, not based on true story.
I would like to know what that case was.
Oh, I don't want to read it.
Oh, I love true crime, so I would love to read it. I would love to know who those kids are and where they... Oh, it's absolutely heartbreaking. You have to tell those stories, though, for the victims, because you have to know that there's people like that out there, so you can... You shouldn't always assume that people are bad, but you should always be ready to not be surprised.
And the circles never stop. Never stop. People Under the Stairs, directed by Wes Craven, features the actress Kelly Jo Minter, who was also in The Dream Child. She played the candy striper, Yvonne.
I love her. She's so cute. I mean, that doesn't surprise me, though, because it's the same director, so...
Now, have you seen the documentary Never Sleep Again, The Elm Street Legacy?
I watched it at one point.
Was it good?
I don't remember. I probably was a couple of years in, so...
It was a 2010 direct-to-video documentary that features everything. It chronicles everything except for the 2010 Nightmare on Elm Street.
Because it came out in...
The same year.
Yeah.
2010. But I think it would be a fun watch. It explores the rise of New Line Cinema, so I'm sure that...
I'm sure it's on Netflix, too, so...
Oh, really? Okay, well, we'll have to check that out.
I mean, that it probably has some Robert and Lynn Shea in it.
Yes. As of February of last year, it had grossed over $400,000 from video sales, which isn't a lot, but for a direct-to-video documentary film, that's probably pretty good. So I want to talk a little bit more about the first Nightmare on Elm Street. So Nightmare on Elm Street came out in 1984. Yes. We didn't even bring up Johnny Depp in a crop top. Talk about the best part of the film.
That is definitely attributed to a lot of sexual awakenings, mine and yours included.
Oh my gosh. Craven, at it again. The basis of the film was inspired by several newspaper articles printed in the LA Times in the 70s.
About a dream?
Well, it says that it's about Southeast Asian refugees who, after fleeing to the U.S. because of war and genocide in Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam, suffered disturbing nightmares and refused to sleep. Some of the men died in their sleep soon after. Medical authorities called the phenomenon Asian Death Syndrome. Have you heard about this?
No, we gotta look into this. Maybe this podcast is gonna turn into like a crazy, weird, freak, historic, conspiracy theory craziness podcast. Because that sounds insane. Where are you reading this on Wiki or where are you reading? Oh, I just saw it. Brugada syndrome? Sudden unexplained death syndrome. That is literally, you know what that is? That is humans giving a name to... We don't fucking know. Guys, we don't fucking know. It's sudden death syndrome. We don't know. It could be anything. It could be magic. It could be the devil. It could be Freddy.
God, Wes Craven is a brilliant, brilliant man.
Wait, did you see the last house on the left? The villain's name was shortened to Krug? What's up with the Krug? Who does he know that's Krug or Krueger? Oh, Fred Krueger. Fred Krueger, you bastard. Don't pick on Wes Craven.
I also like, and this is also here, that he chose not to have Freddy wearing a mask. Because the other slasher films of the 80s, Jason, Michael, Leatherface...
All had masks.
They all had masks.
I love it. I love that he wanted it to be a mask, but still be able to talk and taunt and be like a bully.
And I think part of Freddy's whole shtick is he needs people to know what he looks like, whereas exactly he feeds off of their fear, whereas, you know, Jason, Michael, Leatherface, even, they all have their reasons for why they wear a mask, I think, but none of them are concerned with,
well, it's usually their own either they're trying to hide something or they're insecure in a way.
Yeah, like both Leatherface and Jason are insecure. Michael was just psychotic. Like, yeah, he put on a mask one day and said, I like this, we're gonna... Yeah, so. But Freddy, no mask.
Freddy is a bully. Yeah. So I love that Wes Craven actually based him on a bully.
Hey! England's got... he's got a little record going. He is actually one of only three actors to portray a horror character 8 consecutive times. The other two being Doug Bradley, who portrayed Pinhead in Hellraiser, and Tobin Bell, who played Jigsaw. He said that he enjoys the role of Freddy as it always gives him a break, or it gives him a break from always acting out the nice guy. We should get his memoir. Hollywood Monster, A Walk Down Elm Street with the Man of Your Dreams.
Let's order it. Barnes & Noble it.
He's actually, Robert Englund, currently hosting a Travel Channel show called True Terror with Robert Englund, which showcases scary but true stories about the supernatural or strange.
We need to watch that. What's that on? What's it on?
Travel Channel.
I wonder if we can get it on Hulu.
Oh my god. It's all on here. There's only currently 7 episodes. But it looks like the show is actually, it's kind of like Drunk History, where it's like a reenactment while he's like narrating Robert Englund.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we're going to check that out, but you all should check that out too. Please support our homie, Robert Englund. I want to talk more about the films that we watched. So, The Dream Master, it came out in 1988, only 4 years after the first one. And it's a sequel to the third one. And in the previous film, The Dream Warriors, we have them in the hospital Weston Hills with Nancy. Well, in The Dream Master, the fourth film, Kristen, Kincaid, and Joey have been released from Weston Hills and are back to live their lives as normal teenagers with their families. I didn't realize this, but Weston Hills, I mean, that's a recurring place throughout all of these movies. Freddy vs. Jason, that's the hospital that they go to.
Yes. Yeah, it's the same one.
The homegirl's dad is like a consultant for them, and that's how he gets all the pills to prevent them from dreaming. Kristen, who's the like main chick in the fourth movie, she starts getting like visions, and like she thinks that Freddy's coming back, and like no one wants to believe her, but then he does return, and then we get the waterbed scene. How's that for a wet dream?
I love the waterbed scene. Of course, the girl comes and floats up to the top. You know, you can see the classic 80s titty shot, and the guy's like, oh my gosh, this is the best dream ever. I'm going to get to go in there and be with her and swim around and blah, blah, blah. And then here comes Freddy, and he does the crashing. I can't do effects or sound effects or anything. I'm not that bitch, but and he says, "How's this for a wet dream?" That one cracks me up. He's so funny.
So as the film goes along, Kristen, who's the last of the remaining Elm Street children, Freddy gets to her. Her mom puts sleeping pills. She gets drugged and she falls asleep. Well, but Freddy knows that she's the last of the Elm Street children. And he's like, I can't kill her, because, or at least not right away, because then no one will remember me. And he feeds off of fear. But unfortunately, so then Kristen summons her friend into the dream. Alice, I think, is who she pulls in. I'm not really sure.
That's right, because that's how, because Alice takes us into the next.
The dream child. Yeah, so Alice and Dan survive this film to go on to the next one. But at the end of the movie, we still have Dan, like, tossing a coin into the fountain. And as it hits the water, you see, like, a reflection dissipate. Yes, it's Freddy. Love it. And then that does bring us into the dream child, where Alice is pregnant.
And she's got a whole new set of friends, because everybody's died, so you meet, I forgot their names, but, the candy striper, and then the dude, the comic dude, because this movie does a lot of cool comic effects, where, there's a whole scene where he's put into a comic book, in the dream, and has to fight Freddy, but he's smart enough to not be afraid and make the dream his own.
Right. Mark, yes, he's like lucid dreaming. He becomes a superhero, but unfortunately,
he becomes a superhero that has an obvious villain. When you're doing this, you have to become a superhero that doesn't have an obvious villain. You have to become like a Superman, where the only villain is like, oh, you're allergic to this rock, and then you just look at him and you're like, am I? Are you sure?
We actually meet Alice's child. We don't know at first. Spoilers.
Because he's just a freaky, bug-eyed little kid.
Yeah, little Jacob comes to her in her dream, I think, and is like, I mean, he's helping her. He's not trying to.
He seems like just a curious kid at first, but he is helping her. He's not, benevolent, or maybe even benign. He's not really good or evil. He's a child.
Then at the end of the film, we see Jacob, the child, with his mother, Alice, grandfather, who is a drunk, but probably not at this point, and Yvonne, who lives. But then, of course, there's some children jumping rope nearby, and what are they singing? 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. So again, it's like,
the fear will live on in children, just like any horror story you tell, any spooky campfire story, especially if he literally feeds on fear through dreams. And then we have the brilliancy of Wes Craven saying, oh, well, if he can do that, why couldn't he come out of the movie too and be in my dream or your dream? And that's just so cool. Wes Craven I don't know a lot about him, but I would imagine he was just as much a big horror fan as he was a horror creator. Especially like with Scream, the commentary on, if you have sex, you die. If you do this, you die.
Right. I mean, his whole thing was mixing the horror cliches with like satire. Like, he loved doing that. So that alone says like, yes, I'm a horror junkie and I'm going to make horror, but it's going to be horror that's self-aware.
Yes.
And I love that.
Yes. And fun. And that's totally my, like, aesthetic. Wes Craven is aesthetic.
Agreed. And I mean, without Wes Craven, I don't think that we would have things like A Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, absolutely not. We wouldn't have Cabin in the Woods. We wouldn't have probably a lot of horror comedy that's come out in the past few years. I can't really think of anything off the top of my head. I mean, what was the one we watched recently? Satanic Panic was a good one. That was definitely a horror comedy. And I'd like to watch that one again. It was fun. It was a good time.
Thanks for listening to Peaches and Screams.
If you have any questions or suggestions, contact us at peachesandscreamspod@gmail.com.
We're your horror hosts. I'm Haley Jo.
And I'm Coco.
Sweet Screams.